So there were six essays sent in, paragraphs, and I read them all, and they were all some good ideas were presented, attempts at answering the Purva Paksha. What I'm going to do is read the Purva Paksha again, and then we'll see what Jiva Goswami said. And you can compare it to what you wrote. So, the Purva Paksha. Let us grant, a doubtful person may say, that because their ecstasy was so great, the bliss inherent in the non-differentiated reality of the self assumed a concrete visible form in Lord Narayan by their imagining special features in it. Indeed, Brahman appears in the thoughts of a mind which has become imbued with a portion of the pure mode of goodness. And it appears in a very distinct form, in a mind that has become one with Brahman, by the manifest reflection of Brahman upon the personality of Godhead, who embodies concretely the unlimited totality of pure goodness. Thus, when statements are presented proposing the non-difference of the personality of Godhead's divine form and the supreme Brahman, what is being described is the unavoidable fact that the personality of Godhead is altogether dependent on Brahman as the source of his existence. In whatever imposed conceptions the sages encountered, therefore, it was only the supreme ecstasy of non-duality they perceived, not even a trace of varied forms. Whatever regard they paid to certain imposed conceptions was only an effect of the curious delight they experienced at every moment in their trance of ecstatic meditation. So how is it proven on this evidence that these various imposed conceptions were real manifestations of the absolute truth? Okay, that's the Purva Paksha. Now Jiva Goswami gives his answer. Let me just see one thing. 33. I'm not going to finish it. Okay. Uchite. Uchite bhavanmate. I'm thinking maybe to skip the Sanskrit just for today. Not to read the Sanskrit of the paragraph so we can get to the end of the anuchit. I won't read the Sanskrit except for the quoted verses. This we answer. In your own opinion, the supreme Brahman, which reflects in the functions of pure consciousness, reflects completely. Hare Krishna. After all, you acknowledge that only by abandoning the slightest trace of duality can meditation on Brahman be realized. And you reject the factuality of incomplete knowledge because it cannot lead to oneness with the Supreme. So when there is Brahman realization, when you realize God, according to the Mayavadis, you're realizing not a partial reflection of Brahman, but a complete one. Because God, although he's imperfect, he's infinite. So it must be the whole Brahman is reflected, not just a small part of it. After all, you acknowledge, the Mayavadis acknowledge, that only by abandoning the slightest trace of duality can meditation on Brahman be realized. And you reject the factuality of incomplete knowledge because it cannot lead to oneness with the Supreme. Therefore, it is not appropriate for you to accept that something additional is manifested in the divine bodily form and other features of the personality of Godhead. Furthermore, What do you mean by saying that the Lord's personal form and so on are imaginary features made of pure goodness? What does that mean? That the body and so on of God are transformations of pure goodness? Or that pure goodness is predominant in them? The first cannot be the case, that the Lord's body and so on are transformations of pure goodness, because it is said that pure goodness cannot undergo transformation due to the absence of the motive passion in it. All change is affected by the motive passion. Pure goodness means there's no passion mixed in it. So nothing can change if it's pure goodness. Regular goodness can have some passion mixed in it. Then it can change. And the other cannot be the case. What's the other case? That the motive goodness is predominant in pure goodness. No, that's not really pure goodness. The other cannot be the case, since it is also said that if there is a predominance of pure goodness in the divine form and other features of the Supreme Lord, then these features must be assumed to be products of mixed goodness, if goodness is only prominent. Which means that the word pure would be meaningless in the whole category of statements, including the word pure is used so many times. For the maintenance of the creation, you assume the mode of pure goodness. Why say pure if it's not pure, if it's mixed? Or else, let this mixture of modes be accepted hypothetically, even though it's contradictory to all the claims that it's Vishuddha Sattva throughout so many scriptures. Okay, allow it anyway, theoretically, hypothetically. But then, okay, there's a mixture of modes in the personality of Godhead, in his body. But then there would be no possibility of this mode of goodness being suitable for the reflection of Brahman on it. What to speak of Brahman appearing with it in a distinct form? It seems you have forgotten what you intended to prove. Brahman is realized in the mode of goodness, not in the lower modes. One must actually free himself of passion and ignorance. Even the Mayavadis understand this, because it's said in Shastra, so many places, that one who comes to the mode of goodness can realize Brahman, not someone who's contaminated by the lower modes. So there can't be a mixture of modes and still call it and still have it be pure goodness. It's not pure anymore. But even if somehow you could have a pure goodness that isn't all goodness somehow, it wouldn't be suitable then for Brahman realization. And what they were seeing wouldn't be the absolute truth. It wouldn't be even God. Okay, that's Jiva Goswami's answer. A little complicated. Nobody gave an answer that complicated. Let's see what the commentary does to explain this. Mayavadis propose that the Kumaras were already experiencing Brahman. And then something extra was added. See, they were already Brahman realized. And now they're experiencing the personality of Godhead, something in addition. The imposed conception of Bhagavan. But the Vaishnavas reply, how can this be? Nothing can be actually added to Brahman because it is perfectly complete. The truth is that Bhagavan is the complete revelation of Brahman. Rather than the impersonal conception is incomplete. By the term Vishuddha Sattva, the Mayavadis mean the material mode of goodness. See, Mayavadis don't understand spiritual goodness. They don't accept that there are spiritual energies. Pure spirit doesn't have any energies, doesn't have anything distinct. No distinctions, so no energies. So Vishuddha Sattva is a term that's used in the Upanishads and Puranas. They just take it to mean just goodness. Material goodness with, 99.99% pure. They take it to mean the material mode of goodness without mixture of the lower modes. Okay, somehow you can get 100% pure material goodness. The Mayavadis accept that because the Shastras talk about Vishuddha Sattva. From that mode, they presume, are produced God and the finite souls. But what does Vishuddhisattva have to do with imposed conceptions, such as God's personal body? Yeah, what is the relationship between Vishuddhisattva? How does Vishuddhisattva manifest God's body? Do these things like God's body evolve as transformed products of Vishuddhisattva? Or is Vishuddhisattva just a prominent influence in them? The first case is dismissed because transformation is change, and movement and change only occur when impelled by rajas, the mode of passion. There is no rajas in Vishuddhisattva. Even the Mayavadis are taken to mean pure material goodness. Not, you know, there's no separate spiritual energy, but Vishuddhisattva means there's no passion mixed in it. So then nothing can change. If we allow it to be mixed, or in the second case, the substance of sattva would no longer be Vishuddha, but mixed. If we allow it to be mixed, it cannot reveal the pure reflection of Brahman, which is Bhagavan. But by reaching this conclusion, the Mayavadis can contradict the very point they are trying to produce, to prove that Brahman reflects in the Upadi Bhagavan. Okay, that's what he says. Any comments? Yes?
But they have to substantiate their statements by quoting the scriptures.
Who has to?
The Mayavadis.
These, whatever they quote, they have to substantiate their claims by quoting appropriate scriptures.
They do.
In this context.
Well, see, here, Jiva Goswami has paraphrased or summarized their argument. So we'd have to see the original sources where the Mayavadis themselves say it. They quote. You look at any Mayavadi commentary on Vedanta Sutra, there's a good scattering of quotes from Upanishads and other shastras. So we can look, we can see, but I think in their original arguments they give enough references. But they misinterpret them. Yes?
Can you also say that because they are telling that Sudeva Goswami is meditating in the trance of like ecstasy, definitely. So if Sudeva Goswami, if they refer him to be in the Paramarthika's platform, like the highest of Maya in personal realization, then how he can see the division in the God, like Brahman and Bhagavan also? So can you also say that they are contradicting?
How can Shukadev?
Yeah.
This is a basic...
four Kumaras.
Okay, four Kumaras.
So
or Shukadev.
They are contradicting the position of four Kumaras.
Well, see, they're contradicting any time they talk about a person who's Jivan Mukta. He's liberated, but he's still living in the material world. Supposedly, he doesn't see any dualities.
Yeah.
But he's acting and talking as if he does.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? You know, everything they say, everything they do is full of dualities. You're telling that they're talking and they're acting duality, but they're not thinking duality? How does that work? You know, they can't explain that. It's a basic point of contradiction in their theory. About someone being liberated and still living in this world, and somehow he's not involved with dualities, although all the evidence seems to point to the fact that they're very involved in dualities. Not just the four Kumaras, but any so-called liberated person in this world can't explain his apparent involvement in duality, which seems to be going on. They say, well, he's just working out his prarabdha karma. You know, you turn the fan off and the fan's just spinning, but there's no force. But it's spinning. You know, they are talking, they're acting, they must be thinking also about dualities. Where's the liberation? And they say, okay, when they're finally out of this world, then they're fully liberated. But we'll never see that. We got no messages back from those who have left. So it's just totally inscrutable. It's a nice idea of liberation, but there's no evidence of such a thing. Of a conscious being being conscious, just conscious with no separate object of awareness, and no knower, no knower, no knowledge, no thing known. There is no such thing. Nobody's ever seen such an animal as consciousness with nothing, nobody knowing anything. What kind of consciousness is that? It's nothing. It's no consciousness. It's a basic contradiction in their theory.
They also said that the divine form, the personality Godhead, and Supreme Brahman is not real. But at the same time, they say something is different or something or something.
Well, the Supreme, the body of the Supreme Brahman is not what?
Not real.
Well, no, they don't say it's not dual. They say it is dual. The Sadguru Brahman does have dualities in it.
Somewhere else,
I don't think Brahman is not dual. The absolute truth, but when it's reflected as Bhagavan, that Bhagavan is a duality. He's got a body, he's got so many qualities, that's duality, plenty of it.
Somewhere else they say, you say that something is different from something, and same thing being the source of the other thing.
That we're talking about, they're saying that Bhagavan is derived from Brahman. That Brahman's the reality, and that reality is reflected in illusion, and when that illusion is complete reflection in the mode of goodness, it's Bhagavan. So that's how Bhagavan's derived from Brahman, and so Bhagavan is dependent on Brahman. It's a derivative of Brahman.
And this theory is based on their material mind, which is not purely on the spiritual Brahman.
Whose mind?
The Bible is whatever they state.
Well, they'll rest on the authority of Shankaracharya. It's Lord Shiva. Are you going to say Lord Shiva has a material mind?
But they don't accept Lord Shiva as being spiritual. We accept, but they don't accept.
Well, okay. Well, they say that, Shankaracharya is the absolute truth. In fact, any sannyasi in their line is Brahman. Yeah. There's Narayan, and beyond that, he's actually the absolute truth. Brahmalin. He's merged into Brahman. Certainly Shankaracharya. So they have, they accept, they think that their authority is spiritual, that they have spiritual authorities who don't have material minds. Even though they do so many audacious things, they still think they're perfect, all these mind-body authorities. Because they are the absolute truth, but that's what they imagine. That's their faith. Okay,
It is said that all transformations are due to the influence of the Rajaguna. But in our philosophy, we can see that also in the spiritual world there are so many transformations and activity.
Yes. Well, that law is a material law. That motion cannot happen without the mode of passion. In the material realm. Spiritual realm, there is no passion, but there's plenty of things going on. Shushruta Sutra can manifest all the activity in the spiritual world. We accept that. But the Mayavadis don't. Don't accept that dynamics of the spiritual realm.
Because otherwise, if they accept it, then it's possible to have some transformations without Rajaguna. So
yeah.
It looks like a proof of their theory that it's possible. That,
well, yeah, but we're presenting an argument for the Mayavadis within their framework of what they accept. We don't have to prove this to the Vaishnavas. They already accept the absolute truth as a personality of Godhead. We're trying to convince the Mayavadis here.
So I said in their argument that pure goodness undergo transformation.
Within the realm of duality, within the realm of duality, there cannot be any transformation. We can so say it so they'll understand it. Within the realm of duality, there cannot be change without rajas. And as far as they're concerned, in the realm of non-duality, there's no change. So for them, that's equivalent to saying to have any change at all, you have to have rajas. Because we say there's a realm of transcendence where there's no material duality, but there's plenty of change and there's no rajas. But they can't conceive of such a thing. It's upasananda for them. It's talking about something that doesn't exist. It's an absurdity to that, for them to talk about a realm where there's motion but no rajas. They can't conceive of that. We can, because we understand the spiritual energy, but we can't use that in an argument with them. It's like if you're talking to Buddhists, you don't talk about what God is, because they don't have a conception of God. They say there is no God. So we can't argue with the Buddhists about how God is, because they don't accept that he is. So we can't argue with the Mayavadis about what the spiritual world is like, because they don't accept that there's a transcendental world with variety.
This is the all concepts against them, because it's like a transformation is rajas. In Shukla Sutta, there is no rajas, so there is no transformation.
Yes.
And therefore, your theory is wrong.
And we accept that too. We just phrase it so that we can accept it by saying, within the realm of duality, there can't be activity, motion without rajas, within the realm of duality. So that is phrased in such a way that we can understand it and accept it, and the Mayavadis can also understand it and accept it. Just we have different ideas about what there is beyond the realm of duality. We have different ideas about the realm of non-duality, but we're not talking about that here. Okay, let's move on. Yeah, go ahead.
The previous translation, the first verse you have done, I didn't understand the exact word of it. Therefore, inasmuch as he is object of delight for self-satisfaction,
I'm sorry, let me find where you are.
The previous translation, previous verse translation, first verse.
Oh.
38.36.
26, Chakarate Sham Sam Shogun? No. Therefore, let me find it.
That's the first two lines, I don't know what exact meaning of.
Read me the first few words.
Therefore, inasmuch as.
Okay. Inasmuch as, you can just say because. Because he is the object of delight for self-satisfied sages. Because of the personality of Godhead. I think I should switch. The divine personality of God should come at the beginning of the sentence. That will be less confusing. Now let me read it the new way, slightly different. This might be clearer. And I'll say because instead of as much as. Because the divine personality of Godhead is the object of delight for self-satisfied sages, therefore, he is none other than the real self known as Brahman. Okay, because self-satisfied sages, where do they get their ananda? They're looking for ananda. That's their goal, ananda. Where do they find it? They find it in the personality of Godhead. Or some of them do, at least. Some self-satisfied sages find their ananda that they're looking for. They find it in the personality of Godhead. That must mean the personality of Godhead is Brahman. Because the only source of ananda, as far as they're concerned, is Brahman. And then they encounter the personality of Godhead, and they find the ananda there. That must mean he's Brahman. Okay?
The second, but he is even more Brahman.
Well,
the self means personality of God?
No, the self means Brahman. But I'm saying he's more Brahman than Brahman himself. You know, he's the real Brahman, power Brahman. Self is Atma. Where is Atma?
Okay.
The Mayavadis, or the persons, and the Upanishads use the terms Atma and Brahman, you know, interchangeably. They're the same thing. The Supreme Soul, Brahman, they're the same. But I'm saying that he's more the Supreme Self than even impersonal Brahman is. Because he's the personal Brahman, which is even better. That's all.
The self refers to Bhagavan, basically.
No, the self refers to Brahman. You're taking self to refer to Bhagavan, but in the Upanishad, self means Atma, Yeah, so the word self is Atma in Sanskrit. Atma is not Bhagavan. Atma is the basic idea of Atma is the supreme truth. So we're saying Bhagavan is the real supreme truth. He's more the supreme truth than impersonal Brahman. That's all, that's the argument. Because he's a more complete manifestation of the same supreme truth. There's only one supreme truth. It can be conceived of as impersonal Brahman. The same absolute truth can be conceived of as personal Brahman, as personal Bhagavan. That Bhagavan realization is more complete.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that a general audience in this corner, of course, also, how they understand themselves to be Brahman, because is it like they have to have a kind of philosophical understanding? The audience, they read this.
Well, self would be Paramatma. Well, see the Sanskrit word here, Atmavastu. Jiva Goswami is using the term Atmavastu, the thing that is Atma, the Atma substance, Atma object, entity Atma. I'm just trying to translate that. He didn't say Paramatma, he didn't say Bhagavan there, he said Atmavastu. It's a very generic term. Especially since the Jivatma is Atma, the Paramatma is Atma, you know. So, take it like that. It's Atma and Jivatma and Paramatma all mixed together, not recognizing a difference between them. It's very often how the Upanishads are talking. The Upanishads, it's not that the Upanishads are teaching Mayavad philosophy, but in order to accommodate the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, sometimes the Upanishads just talk about Atma in a very generic way, self, not distinguishing supreme self and finite self. Just talking about spiritual nature in general, something that Mayavadis and impersonalists, people with impersonal inclinations, they don't have a problem listening to talk about just spirit or self. This is just generic spirit. So we're saying, maybe another word. Maybe.
But all the devotees understand the reading this.
I don't know. The problem is with the word self. See, the word self, even according to what we've been taught by Prabhupada's explanation of the Bhagavatam, we see self with a capital S, that means Paramatma. Okay? It's not a term for Krishna, it's a term for Paramatma. The self with a capital S. Or super soul. That's the terminology Prabhupada used. So Prabhupada, when he talked about capital self, that meant Paramatma. So that's saying that Brahman, Paramatma is known as Brahman in the Upanishads. But Bhagavan is more Paramatma than Brahman is. He's the real super soul. I'll make a note of this, that you find it confusing using the word self here. No, but Jiva Goswami didn't do that. He just said, Atmavastu. I'm not going to edit Jiva Goswami. I'm supposed to be translating it, not rewriting it. He didn't say Paramatma. I'm not going to squeeze in a Parma there when he doesn't have it. He just has Atmavastu. He's using the generic term, the way the Upanishads sometimes do. I know, but I'm trying to present this book without, you know, pre-digested, without, it's not a summary study. I'm trying to present the, you know, unexpurgated, you know, I'm trying to present everything Jiva Goswami is saying. It's turning out to be extremely difficult to do. But if I just do a summary study, that's already been done. Mm-hmm. You know, we already have other editions of the Siddhartas where, you know, it's been smoothed out to make it easier to understand. But I've got all the sharp edges still in here. And maybe it's, maybe it just can't be published like this. I don't know. You know, if devotees can't understand it, it's a real problem.
or in a commentary somewhere.
But I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to clarify things and orient the readers in the commentary. But the translation, I'm sort of confined by the fact that I'm trying to be accurate and not just smooth it out to make it easier. I can leave out things and rephrase things, but then that's not presenting what Jiva Goswami said exactly. Yes? Yes?
About
which?
Upadis.
Okay.
The Brahma is integrated into Upadis. And you mentioned the previous Anucheta, ordinary persons are created by violent Upadis, and the supreme person is created by
infinite
one, the four persons. And then they said that this this Upadha from which the Lord is created is totality of pure goodness. But we know that if it's material energy, it cannot be infinite, it must be limited, because material energy is not limited.
Material energy is not limited.
Yes, so as you said, it cannot be unlimited water, according to this.
But God is not in the Narayano Purovyaktat. Shankaracharya says, Narayan is not within the confines of material nature. He's beyond it. So Narayan can be, even if nature is finite, personality of Godhead, according to the Mayavadis, is infinite. But he's still a degradation of Brahman because he contains duality. But an infinitude of duality, not finite duality.
How possible to have a reflection from something which is
have a what?
Finite? How possible to get a... Because it is said that he's a reflection of something like an infinite, something that's not in God, that he is a reflection of Brahman in something which is not infinite, but which is...
Well, infinite. See, we're talking according to the theory now of reflection. We're using the metaphor of a reflection, like the sun reflected in a body of water. So that means a reflection requires a medium. Reflection is a reflection in something. If you're going to have an infinite reflection, a reflection of the whole infinite, you know, Brahma, but you know, just like you have a distorted mirror, or you're reflecting the sky on the water. And because the water is moving, the sky seems to be moving in the reflection. A reflection of a tree in the water. And the water is moving, so the tree seems to be moving in the water. You know, bending. Although it's not, but the reflection is bending. So that's the imperfection. So they're proposing that Bhagawan is a reflection of the whole Brahman, not just a piece of it. Like the whole sky. You've got a lake so big, an infinite lake, that reflects the whole infinite sky. The problem is, to have an infinite reflection, you have to have an infinite mirror to reflect it in. Yeah. You know, this is the problem.
Yeah. In this case, it cannot be infinite, so therefore, it looks like a big...
Well, the Mayavadis try to get around it. They just have Brahman reflecting on itself. There's nothing on it. Anyway, they can't answer. They get, you know, we pin them down on the question of where's the mirror? What is the reflection in? That's where the reflection theory breaks down. So they try these other theories, like the Parichet theory, breaking off little chunks of Brahman. And then the Vivart theory. When both of those theories don't work, they resort to the Vivart theory. It's just hallucination. Nothing really happening. It's just an appearance of duality. There is no duality. It's just in your head. Yeah, you just need to get your head straightened out and the duality will go away. These inconsistencies, the Mayavada theory is full of these logical inconsistencies. The Vaishnavas have been attacking these inconsistencies for the last, you know, 1500 years. You know, the Vaishnava commentaries or Vaishnava didactic books, polemic books against the Mayavadis, are full of these arguments, hundreds of them. Hundreds of arguments about the inconsistencies in the Mahayana theory. Jiva Goswami is just summarizing some of them, the most prominent. When you look at the Sarvasambhadani for this Bhagavad Sundara, it goes on for 50 pages, proving that the Absolute Truth does have inherent energies, intrinsic energies, you could say. And that energy is real. And the Mayavadis can't accept that, and they have so many arguments against it. He deals with all these arguments with the Mayavadis for 50 pages, just on the one point, in the Sarvasambhadani. If you think this is hard, if you think this paragraph is hard, try the Sarvasambhadani on this Bhagavad Sundarbha. I'm working on it now. I've been trying for months to get through it. And I even took a vow to finish it by the end of the year, and got, 5 days, and I'm not anywhere near finishing it.
How much is it over?
How much?
Is it over?
Oh, there's 172 paragraphs, and I've only done 35. I'm working on it, but it's tough. And I don't know if anybody will be able to stand it, even if I do the best I can on it. And, you know, I've had 3 editors quit on me recently. They can't handle this book, the Bhagavad Sundara. The best editors we have. Now we're trying out Jagadish Prabhu, new editor, but he's very, you know, he's trained up in philosophy and he's a good writer. We're going to try him. Yeah.
So, again about the Upadhis. It was said in the commentary also that many varieties of Upadhis can be superimposed on Brahman. And then, as a result, we get Lord Vishnu or Shiva or Durga, and so on.
Yes.
So, how to understand it? Does it mean that we have a...
This is the Panchopasana theory.
Yeah.
You can conceive of, if you want a personal conception of the Supreme, you can take your pick of the 5.
But how do you understand that we have different forms? Does it mean that, for example, we have pure goodness?
Well, where does Bhagavan get created? One theory is it gets created in the jiva. This is an interesting theory, but it's one Mayavadi presentation. Where does this illusion of Bhagavan originate? It originates in the mind of the jiva, which is interesting. It makes the jiva create Bhagavan rather than the other way around. In the Sarvasambhadani, Jiva Goswami was arguing on how the absurdity of that idea, that the jiva imagines Bhagavan, so he's creating Bhagavan in his mind. Rather than Bhagavan's supposed to be his creator, he's creating Bhagavan.
So this way, the mind of the jiva is an upadhi which is superimposed on Brahman?
Well, the mind of the jiva is not the upadhi, it's the medium in which the reflection is, it's the mirror that the reflection is put in. The mind of the individual soul is where Brahman gets reflected in the picture, the image of Bhagavan. In other words, we make up Bhagavan in our own heads. That's not the only Mayavad way of explaining it. That's one way they try to explain it, some of them.
But what about all this, like, we have different forms of the Lord? Does that mean that...
Well, you got different devotees. You got the devotees of Ganesh. So Bhagavan, Brahman reflects in those minds, in the Marathi minds, reflects as everybody in Maharashtra worships Ganesh. A lot of people in Maharashtra worship Ganesh as God. So in their minds, in those Maharashtrian minds, Brahman is reflecting and appearing as Ganesh. That's how the Mayavadis would explain it. According to the nature of the mirror, you get different deities.
You said that it's what Mayavadi says also. All these new religions, one thing also is that they say that everything is one and all religions because there are different worshippers than Brahman.
Different ones? Yes,
different worshippers.
Yeah, but where do the different worshippers come if everything is one? How are there separate minds to reflect Brahman in if there isn't duality to start with? There's no duality, so there's no separate minds, right? So there's no mirrors to reflect anything in. Where does the reflection come from then, if there's no mirror? Imaginary mirror, well, then the mirror is a reflection. Then you need a second mirror to create the first mirror. It'll go on forever. There's no basis for duality. You need if you're going to have reflections, you need something to be, some medium for the reflection to be reflected in. And there is no such medium. If all that exists is Brahman, a non-differentiated Brahman, there's no basis of duality unless you have actual duality to start with. Yes?
Is it possible? Want to know what is
rebirth? Well, I'm not expert on that. There are three basic Mayavada explanations of how duality originates. Basically, they say there's a kind of force called avidya, which creates. But how does avidya? How does that delusory? It's not an energy, because they don't talk about energies. Anyway, there's avidya, ignorance, or whatever it is, maya. Maya creates the duality, but how does it? So there's three different theories of how ignorance or illusion creates duality. It can be understood as a reflection, as a subdivision, or as a delusion or hallucination. Now that third one, I'm not sure how it's explained because I haven't studied it. I've studied a little bit about the first two theories. The third theory was mostly developed by later Mayavadis. Shankaracharya gives the basic idea of all three theories in his commentaries, but he doesn't systematize it exactly in a very, very thoroughly. It was later Mayavadis who actually worked out these theories. If our theory comes later, and I haven't studied it. What is it? What do they mean by vivarta? I'm not sure. Vivarta just means development in Sanskrit. They mean, you know, appearance of something from nothing. It's just imagination. But whose imagination? If to have imagination, to have an illusion, there must be somebody who's real to have the illusion. If the person who's having the illusion is also an illusion, then there must be another person who's having him as an illusion. You know, where's the basis for the illusion? Unless you have something real that's having the illusion. Some conscious entity. Illusion is a defect of consciousness. There must be a consciousness to have a delusion. Where's the consciousness? The only consciousness we know that's real, according to the Mayavadis, is Brahman itself.
Yeah.
So who's in Maya? Brahman's in Maya. Who's having the delusion? Brahman is. Nobody else can. There is nobody else.
Now they say Brahman is having
the
consciousness of illusion, so when it comes
then to... Then he's in Maya. Why worship Brahman? Brahman's in Maya.
That's what they've been telling all the Upanishads are attacking Brahman.
Well, they can't say it, although that they try to avoid saying that. Because Brahman is supposed to be unassailable. Brahman is supposed to be perfect. Not always being sniped at by upadis. He's supposed to be free from upadis. So how can they be attacked all the time by upadis, by dualities, when he's supposed to be free from dualities? So they really have to try to avoid saying that, although it's a logical conclusion of the theory. But they just try to sidestep all these logical conclusions, avoid saying these things. Yeah, find ways to go around it and explain it away without admitting that Brahman is himself subjected to these dualities. Who else is subjected to them? Where do they come from? What's the basis of them? The only basis of delusion could be Brahman himself. And the only victim of delusion could be Brahman himself. But they try to avoid saying that. Yeah.
So you have Brahman, you have Premodal goodness, then we get an illusion and we have form of the Lord. But how we can get different forms of the Lord? Does it mean that this mode of goodness undergoes some transformations? Or
well, it certainly means there's variety in pure goodness then. If pure goodness creates not only God, but various forms of God, then there must be various potencies within the Shuddha Sattva. Not only, you know, we got the problem that it changes, but now we have a problem that it has variety in it.
So it's possible according to
it. It's possible because they consider that Sattva Guna to be material anyway. So to have variety in material energy is okay for the Mayavadis. They can accept variety in the material realm. And Shuddha Sattva, mode of goodness, is a material mode. But then they've got God as a creation. This is what they actually think, that Krishna is Maya. God is a creation of the material energy. That's what they're actually saying. That's why we call them Mayavadis. Because they say even God is a product of Maya. Sattva is a mode of Maya, a mode of nature. And they don't recognize the spiritual nature. The only nature they know is material nature. And if Bhagavan is being created by material nature, then Bhagavan is a material product. That's what they actually believe. They believe Krishna is also Maya. Therefore we disparagingly call them Mayavadis. They don't call themselves Mayavadis. We call them Mayavadis. Because they think Krishna is Maya.
And then when they said that that there can be a mixture of modes, not only pure goodness, but interests of goodness or passion, so we get some more distorted forms like jivas or whatever modes. Is this not what they think? Or?
Well, no. What they say is that jiva is also coming from sattva, but he's a small spark. He's a reflection of only part of Brahman. It's like you have a small mirror. And only part of the sky gets reflected in the small mirror. So that's a jiva. There's some small reflection of part of Brahman. And there are many small parts, so there are many jivas. But there are also Satchidananda. The jiva is also Atma. They don't say the jiva has got, you know, is partly ignorance and passion. They don't say that. And the Upanishads don't say that. The Upanishads call the Jivatma Shuddha Sattva. And the Mayavadis have to accept the Upanishads as authority. It's the, you know, other religions who think that man is partly material. You know, that the Greeks, you know, Prometheus made men out of mud and he breathed life into them. And Christians think that we have, you know, we're a combination of body and soul. But that's our philosophy, is we're just soul. The body's not us. But the Christian idea is that we are body with some soul mixed into it. But the Upanishad, the Vedic version, is the Jivatma is pure. It should have. The Atma in general, any Atma, to be an Atma has to be pure. Satchidananda. Okay, we didn't finish anything. And we're starting on a, you know, ending at a point of complete confusion, but we'll just have to continue when we come back after a month. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you.
Usually no. Usually doesn't speak.